This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 305, our 2021 mock draft episode. It's draft week. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, and Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. We are here as always, and this is, I think we've been doing this show since probably 2014. With the NFL draft happening this week, it is time for us to take our shot at mocking the first round of the draft, Seth. And this year, I mean, the first two picks are locks, we think, but does it feel like we know less this year than we've known every other year?
Yeah, I think we do, and a lot of that is that there's just been no contact with teams. More than ever, you're seeing people rely on agents and what agents are telling us, and that's, you know, let's be honest, they work.
It's self-serving. It's self-serving, right? Everything that they say.
And so, you know, for that reason, I think we're getting a lot of different information, and right now it's coming from all over the place, and it's going to make for a more intriguing draft. But there's also the thing that we've talked about. This is just, at the end of the day, this isn't as high end of a draft class as we've seen in years past. There's not the elite talent at the elite positions that we've seen in the years past outside of quarterback. And so, you know, whether it's edge rusher, whether it's offensive tackle, whether it's cornerback, you don't see those guys as highly rated as maybe years past. So it's a little different. And then again, just because of the state that we're still in within the pandemic situation, you're seeing, you know, you're not as involved or intrigued with what's going on.
Now, what we're going to do tonight in this episode, it's recording on a Tuesday night. We'll get this posted. I'll try and get this posted early Wednesday so that everyone gets a chance to listen to our picks and our projections before the actual NFL draft on Thursday. So you can, you know, torch and pitchfork us with our picks. Or if you wait till after the draft and you listen to it, then you can just laugh at us of how that goes. We've had some fairly accurate ones before, mock drafts aren't ever really accurate, but we've nailed Cardinals picks in years past, and so we'll kind of see what that is. The way we'll do this mock draft is like we've done in years past. We're not alternating picks like Seth and Justin's show, the original Draft Breakdown podcast, their free episode this week. They alternated picks for their mock draft. We've seen like Mel Kiper and Todd McShay alternate picks for mock drafts. What we do every year is we both do our own mock draft. Now, we actually know what we're doing. We see each other's mock drafts beforehand. But we'll get a chance to kind of see each other's reasons for the picks, and you know, hopefully you guys benefit from that. Mock drafts are kind of fun, though at this point, I'm tired of them. It's always about the week or the week of or the week before. We kind of hit saturation point, and I think we're there right now. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's start off with the first pick. We've got got Jacksonville up for the number one pick. You and I both have Trevor Lawrence going first overall. And that, I mean, there's going to be no surprise. This is even less of a surprise. There's even less of a doubt than when the Cardinals took Kyler Murray first overall, because, you know, the Cardinals managed to make it somewhat intriguing. Will they move on from Josh Rosen? Will they keep Josh Rosen and then go with Nick Bosa? And even though by the end it felt like Murray was the pick, there were still a bunch of people who felt, nah, they're not going to give up on Rosen after only 1 year. They just drafted a quarterback top 10. That's not the case with the Jaguars. Guess what? Urban Meyer has basically said that Trevor Lawrence is the guy. The question is, how good can he be with the Jaguars?
Yeah, and I mean that's the question they're going to have to answer is how good can they be? When you look at what he is as a prospect, he's one of the cleanest prospects we've seen in years. I mean, he's basically, since he stepped on the field at Clemson, been the guy in this draft. And then he's really never wavered from that spot, which is, I mean, in the internet age, it's really unheard of to not only be that hyped, but then to live up to the hype. To see a guy go through the entire process of, you know, three college football playoffs, winning a national championship, you know, being runner up as a sophomore, basically to do almost everything you can do in college football. It's just crazy to see the living up to the expectations. And what's even crazier is that the guy that was ranked second behind him is in this draft too and has basically done everything as well except win a national championship. He got his team to a national championship. He just never won one. So it's crazy to see in the internet age where we're learning about these kids when they're 15, 16 years old, to see them live up to the hype and get to where they are. Now it's obviously the next step, and for Lawrence, that's going to be, can he and Urban Meyer kind of carry on their legacies? I mean, these are two of the most hyped coaches or coach and players I can remember coming out, and they're coming into the NFL together. They're going to a situation in Jacksonville, which has been an incredibly difficult situation to see success in.
Obviously, because you got one good year out of Blake Bortles. They really have, like, that is as bad a situation in terms of history with quarterbacks to try and elevate a franchise. And if Lawrence, like, we've seen. So, but what I find interesting about Trevor Lawrence is this. A year ago, with a prospect like Joe Burrow, and we saw him come in and really do well. So we've seen the last 2 years, the top pick in the draft and Kyler Murray and Joey Burrow come in and really meet and exceed expectations for all the high, like for teams where they were stepping in day one as starters and they did not disappoint in the least. Lawrence, can he do the same thing? And he was a guy that's a lot of these draft experts, like I think Todd McShay had him. Had Lawrence come out a year ago, he would have been head and shoulders above even Joey Burrow, which really that really says a lot with the type of prospect it is, because the year that Burrow had was insane. And Lawrence didn't, like, he wasn't eye-popping this past year. But the thing is he's played at a high level for so long. Like, you have to nitpick at things. Well, he's outspoken socially, and he doesn't seem to have the same chip on his shoulder because he just isn't driven with that. That doesn't mean he doesn't want to be a great football player. It means that, you know, that's not all he is. And that's, you know, I personally like that about a football player, because, you know, that's actually healthy for life, is if you have more than just football. But the fact he's going to come in, you've got Urban Meyer taking over as head coach, you've got a chance, and I want to see what he can do in year one. We saw Andrew Luck come in and make an impact immediately, and they're talking about Lawrence like an Andrew Luck type prospect. Now, obviously, Luck, his career was cut short with injuries and just the beating that he took. But for the sake of the league, it'd be fantastic to see him elevate Jacksonville to a competitive team.
Well, especially with the way the NFC South is kind of or sorry, the AFC South has kind of turned itself on its head. You've got the whole situation in Houston, obviously. The Colts are basically still trying to find their way after the abrupt retirement of Andrew Luck. They traded for Carson Wentz, obviously. And then the Tennessee Titans have, you know, found this rejuvenation of Ryan Tannehill and his career, but it seems like they're kind of stuck in place, you know, that maybe that group has gone as far as they can go. And so to see a new blood, fresh blood in Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence could really, you know, reinvigorate the whole division and maybe the whole AFC.
Absolutely. Now, let's move to the second pick, New York Jets. They have the number two pick. It is pretty much everyone understands that they're taking BYU's Zach Wilson. Completely different trajectory on his way to the top of the draft in the fact that Wilson didn't really even, you know, come into his own until this year. I mean, he wasn't the clear-cut starter really before 2020, but or basically in the middle of 2019, and then he was eye-popping. Just the type of throws and the way he played, the athleticism, the excitement that he brought to the field on a BYU team this past year that really was better than anyone thought under the circumstances that they were given. The question is, what type of is he a, you know, Patrick Mahomes type in terms of raw talent? Is he Mitch Trubisky? Is he Blaine Gabbert? What can we, and he's going to a place where quarterbacks go to die in the Jets. Like, there was, I had a radio spot last week, and the diehard Jets fans was one of the hosts, and talk about what Wilson's going to be. You know, kind of the idea of you know that he's going to be a bust. And, well, the truth is, BYU's history, they've had Super Bowl winning quarterbacks come out of that school, but they were forever ago. Jim McMahon, Steve Young. The BYU quarterbacks in the NFL since then for BYU aren't impressive at all. John Beck, Max Hall, those type of guys. Ty Detmer, what I mean, they haven't done much. And then you add to the fact that Jets quarterbacks tend to bust. Even if they show some promise, they just never pan out. And so is Wilson the guy to buck that trend? I don't know, because the level of, as good as he was, there was a pretty solid concern about level competition.
Yeah, and I've said, I think his ceiling, and this isn't, you know, to take anything away from him, this is a good ceiling, but I think his ceiling is Baker Mayfield. So, you know, is that a guy in the state that New York is in right now that's going to be a difference maker? That's, you know, I think that's a fair question. You look at it, I don't understand how Wilson is above Justin Fields at all.
Nope, I truly doesn't don't. Make any sense at all, other than the Ohio State thing.
Right. And so, but, you know, for that sake, I'm not making the decision. So it's easier for me to say I wouldn't do something than I would do something.
So the Jets are going to take. So we after the top two picks, now things get a little bit interesting. Let's start with the third pick. The San Francisco 49ers, who had the 12th pick, traded all the way up to number three. And by all accounts, we don't actually know who they're going to pick. And we've got to be a quarterback, but who's it going to be? Is it going to be Justin Fields? Is it going to be Trey Lance? Is it going to be Mac Jones? You know, Kyle Posey, a good friend of Seth's, and he runs Niners Nation, he is dead set on the fact that it's going to be Justin Fields, yet recent reports from big-name reporters, these aren't guys that just throw crap out there, you know, Mac Jones, and then more recently, it's deciding between Mac Jones and Trey Lance. A week before the draft, how could you not know who you're getting? Who do you think the Cardinals are, the 49ers are taking at number three?
I think it's one of those situations, and this is just a conspiracy theorist in I think it's just one of those situations where they absolutely know who they're taking. But the NFL has made it where it's like, well, the first three picks can't be basically known going in. So let's create some drama surrounding it. As you said, the Cardinals, you know, a couple years ago with Kyler Murray, last year, you know, it was Joe Burrow, and then it was, you know, a lot of questions. And so I think going into this year, you really didn't want to have the first three picks known. So that being said, I went, you know, and I, Kyle's not hedging or anything like that, but he said all along it was going to be Justin Fields or Trey Lance. He still thinks it's Fields, but he definitely kind of understands the Lance love at this point. So I don't think there's any way it's Mac Jones. So when I'm wrong in a couple days, you know, you can yell at me, but I'm going to go with Trey Lance here.
And I'll say this, for the type of quarterback, and this is something I heard from Kyle Madsen over at Niners Wire from my network, and if you're looking at the type of quarterback in terms of skills and type of offense, Lance is the guy that fits. Obviously, Justin Fields is the guy who has the best resume by far. He's big, he's strong, he can throw, he played against great competition, he started for a long time. I don't understand why, I honestly don't. But Trey Lance is more pro-ready. He's done more of those pro concepts, especially what Kyle Shanahan does under center, play action. He did a lot of that at North Dakota State. And so in terms of offensive concepts, adding to the fact that he has a really high upside, he plays well off schedule, and so he gives you that Patrick Mahomes type effect, a Kyler Murray effect, you know, those types of the athleticism and the playmaking and the off schedule big plays. That said, my pick, I'm as much as maybe it's just me in part trying to manifest this into existence. I think I'm mocking Mac Jones because that seems to be where most of the reports are going. So Alabama's Mac Jones, it doesn't make any sense why a team would trade up, give three first-round picks to draft a Mac Jones. Who had, and I will say this, in terms of production and statistical performance, was basically on par with Tua Tagovailoa a year ago. But if you, let's just look historically. I don't, Nick Saban, like, once we've seen that at the Alabama program, if you're a stud as a freshman, guess what? You play. Mac Jones was, he was passed over for Tua. He was passed over by Jalen Hurts. And it wasn't until last year that he really got his thing. And we've seen Alabama quarterbacks perform great and lead championship winning teams. But it seems like, and why would the 49ers move up to number three to get a guy with the ceiling that they've already got in Jimmy Garoppolo or like Kirk Cousins? Like these guys that Shanahan's been kind of married to as those type of quarterbacks who are, they're fine, they're good, but you know, you have to have everything around them better rather than there being the reason why your team is elevated. That said, that Mac Jones going to the 49ers, unless he becomes a Tom Brady type, that's good for the division. That's good for the Cardinals and Cardinals fans. But that said, I mean, if Shanahan wants Mac Jones, guess what? Are they really going to tell him no? So I'm saying the 49ers take Mac Jones. That's what the most media reports seem to be. And if they don't, if they end up taking Justin Fields, okay. Wow, well done. Great smokescreen. No team has ever pulled that off quite as well, except maybe the Browns up until the day of the draft with Baker Mayfield.
Well, and yeah, and it just brought a lot of intrigue to the whole situation. you know, and that's the thing is, it seems unfathomable to think that they traded that much for Mac Jones, but like you said, that's where the reports are, so I can't blame you for, you know, following basically everything we're being told right in public. I mean, everything that's printed is saying Mac Jones. So that brings us to the Atlanta Falcons.
And we both have the same pick. Who's your guy for them?
So this changed today for both of us. And again, just kind of listening and drawing our own conclusions on things. I've heard that they like Justin Fields quite a bit. And then Kyle Pitts came out and said today that he thinks that the Atlanta Falcons are going to go with a quarterback. If the Falcons go with a quarterback, that could be a really good thing for the Arizona Cardinals. I know that's odd, but it basically pushes a position player down even further. So it could be a good thing for the Cardinals. So maybe Jess and I are just really trying to manifest things right now. But we're going to go with both of us went with Justin Fields to the Atlanta Falcons.
And it makes sense, even though the rumblings, maybe they trade out of this pick. Maybe. The thing is, they're in a situation they still want to try and with the financial commitment to Matt Ryan, they need to compete because they can't blow it up and keep this old solid quarterback. He's not a great quarterback anymore, but he's got a high ceiling of what he can do. So it makes sense when you're this high in the draft to pick up his future replacement. But at the same time, then you're giving up on a weapon to improve the team now. Now, I will say I changed this pick twice, I believe. And no, actually, I went with almost chaos. And my original pick for them, and this came after the report that they were, not necessarily that they're shopping it, but they're taking calls, and they've taken a lot of calls on receiver Julio Jones. And so, to give Matt Ryan a big-time playmaker, I almost went with LSU's Ja'Marr Chase. And I think that would have... in fact, doing that caused some chaos in terms of trade ups because then that put two talented high upside quarterbacks in both Justin Fields and Trey Lance, made them available for teams to move up and get. All the reports coming out seem to be it's probably going to be Justin Fields, but here's a wild card. Ja'Marr Chase giving Matt Ryan that big-time receiver coming out of college and if they trade Julio Jones or pair him with, then you've got Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Ja'Marr Chase kind of trying to bridge the gap for the next couple of years. I could see it happening.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if they go Chase, you do wonder, does that mean that they're going to sell on Julio Jones? And if they do, that's a likely a first round pick, you would think, right?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, because his salary super palatable.
It is, but the thing that you have to realize is that a team trading for him likely knows that they cannot just pay Julio on that salary. Kind of like the Cardinals situation with DeAndre Hopkins. Part of the reason they got him without giving a first-round pick is because there was the understanding they're going to give him a big extension. And a team that's going to give a big extension usually doesn't give up a first-round pick. And I think that's you might see that.
Yeah, and that could be.
So, number five. This is where we start to change a little bit, even though... The Cincinnati Bengals, there's one position that makes sense, and then there's the position that it seems all directions are pointed to. I have them taking Oregon left tackle, Penei Sewell. It's the one that makes sense. They've got a franchise quarterback. They have a history with franchise quarterbacks of not protecting them. That was part of the problem with Carson Palmer. Joe Burrow got his butt beat when it just got beat to the ground. It tore up his knee. You need to protect your young quarterback. However, you've got his former teammate who put up monster numbers at LSU in Ja'Marr Chase. All the signs point to Chase, but I can't swallow that. Maybe it's just because I just want to say your stupid Cincinnati is as good a playmaker as Chase could be. How could you it's malfeasance, in my opinion, if you don't get a solid tackle prospect in terms of Sewell, who is really considered to be the type of guy who's going to be a great tackle. There are some minor concerns, but after all of, you know, all is said and done, he's expected to be a great tackle, and you need to protect your quarterback so he can get the ball down the field, because if you have Ja'Marr Chase and you don't have a guy to protect him, then what you've got is not Joe Burrow playing quarterback trying to throw to a guy who's a big play guy down the field. And as we saw with AJ Green a year ago, you don't look like a good receiver. That said, who do you see the Bengals going?
It sounds like they're going with Chase.
They're morons if they do. Like, I like Chase is great. But they're morons if they don't protect Burrow.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a weird pick. I agree with you. I think that's where they're going. Everything we're hearing is that's the way they're going, and it is astonishing to really think about that they would. You don't want to say throw their young quarterback to the wolves, but it does feel
kind of that bad.
That way.
The number six pick, the Miami Dolphins. We do have different players going there. Who's your pick for the Dolphins at number six?
I think this guy could go as early as four. I don't think he gets past six. Kyle Pitts, maybe one of the five best non-quarterbacks in this draft. Just a phenomenal talent. I think this is what Miami had envisioned when they traded back up to six, is that they would have a choice of either Ja'Marr Chase or Kyle Pitts. And you know, obviously I had Chase gone, so they went with Pitts. You have something else.
And I do. I have them taking Chase, although an interesting thing that I heard today on Tuesday is the fact that, you know, and Seth even mentioned this to me before the show, that there's the possibility that Miami's not going to draft players who opted out, which would then take Ja'Marr Chase out of the equation, and that they were more considering Kyle Pitts or Jalen Waddle, the next receiver prospect. Now, maybe that was simply in my eyes, in part, it's like, well, maybe they think that Atlanta's going to take him, or simply that the Bengals are going to take him, that he won't be available. So they said, well, we're focusing on these other areas. I had them going Chase because they already have Mike Gesicki. As fun as Pitts would be, it would make more sense for them to get a big-time receiver than a big-time tight end. And historically, you're going to hit more with a top-five receiver than a top-six receiver, or a top-ten pick in a receiver than you're going to get in a top-ten pick at a tight end, just historically. And so you've already got Mike Gesicki. Let's get Ja'Marr Chase on the outside and give Tua a real big-time threat. And so for me, Pitts is going to fall a little bit. He's going to end up with an interesting team. The Detroit Lions at number seven. We both have them trading out. Who do you have them trading out to?
I have the Lions trading down to 15 with the New England Patriots. The Patriots don't want to take a chance that the Panthers or the Broncos or a team trading up from maybe 20 or 21 go to get the last kind of consensus first-round quarterback. I have them going up to get Mac Jones at number seven with the Lions.
And that's kind of fun, because now that gives them five quarterbacks in the top 10. Guess what? That's the same thing for me, only different team, different quarterback. And so how I have it going, the Lions trade out, and it's because Trey Lance is still on the board. The Denver Broncos move up two spots, and they think, well, why'd they do that? Well, that's because in this scenario, the New England Patriots are also calling to trade up, which honestly makes more sense. In my first version of this mock, it was Justin Fields who was right here. And so the Bears traded up to get Justin Fields. When I did this, I have it. So the Broncos and Patriots are both trying to move up to number 7. And the I don't know what the price is going to be, but here's the thing. The Lions take the 9 pick because it's a higher pick and it still allows them to hit their top target, well, one of those big-time playmakers at receiver or tight end. And so I have the Broncos moving up to 7, and they take Trey Lance, and giving them basically the possibility to move on from Drew Lock even this year, or even if not, that allows them, if Drew Lock is just fine, they can trade him next year and give Lance a year to develop and then to take over. I think that is ideal. But so after 7 picks, we now have, with 7 picks off the board, 7 picks gone, we've got 5 quarterbacks on the board, and that's what we're going to, that's what we do talk about when we come up next. Coming up to the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the next, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we will talk about the next 7 picks in the draft. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. We've got the Carolina Panthers on the clock with the 8th pick overall. We have different picks for that. Seth, who's your pick for Carolina?
I have them going with J.C. Horn, the top cornerback in the draft. Kind of rumors, conversation came out yesterday that they're smitten with Horn. We'll see how that works out, because that could be a problem for the Cardinals if Horn goes that early.
Correct. And I have, so since Pitts is available because things have gotten pushed down the board, this is where the Panthers surprisingly land with a big-time playmaker. They get Kyle Pitts. Little did, you know, if you didn't know, you know who the top tight end is on their depth chart right now? That would be Dan Arnold and his 31 catches last year. They signed Arnold to a 2-year deal, formerly the Cardinals, 2 years, $6 million. Kyle Pitts is already better than Dan Arnold, and he upgrades that position immediately. I think then that still looks good for the Arizona Cardinals, because, you know, if for my best case scenario, there are 4 players that the Cardinals could get that would make, that would be an A draft. It still is a possibility. But let's see what's up next for the 9th pick. For you, it's still the Broncos. For me, it's now the Lions.
Yeah, and I have the Broncos going with Penei Sewell, the guy that fell just a little bit, maybe 3 or 4 spots. If the Lions don't trade out, I would wager they'll draft Sewell at 7. But with the way the draft fell, Sewell goes 9. He can pop in right tackle for the Broncos from day one.
And here the Lions have the 9th pick overall, which brings us to, hey, they're in position to pick one of the 2 Alabama receivers. They lost Kenny Golladay. They let him go. And so here the Lions take with the 9th pick Jaylen Waddle. They continue to their history of drafting receivers in the first round, but they give Jared Goff a potential star in Waddle. I think both of us are of the opinion that both Waddle and Devontae Smith, both are, it's kind of what flavor do you like more, but we think both will be very, very good receivers in the pros, and I think this is a perfect pick for the Lions. So not only do they still get Waddle, they actually got extra capital to do so.
That would be a good move for them.
Number 10, we go, they have the Dallas Cowboys going in the same direction. Only for you, it is the 2nd cornerback off the board, and for me, it is the 1st cornerback. We have them taking Patrick Surtain the 2nd out of Alabama. Cowboys need defensive, they need help on defense, especially at cornerback. I think this is a perfect match. Surtain and Horn have been connected to the Cowboys. It's going to be interesting which way they go. In your case, they don't get the choice between the two. Here, I have them choosing Surtain over Horn.
Yeah, and there are, after the top picks, so we'll just say from 10 and on, there's 3 names that have basically been, we have some more matching picks, but there's 3 names that have basically been kind of penciled in the Cowboys at 10, the Giants at 11, and then the Steelers at 24 have those three teams. You feel like names have been basically, like I said, penciled in there. We'll see how that turns out.
For the Cardinals, bad news on your side. That means both the top corners are off the board for Arizona. The Cardinals still have some hope because J.C. Horn is still on the board and Waddle is off the board. And so for both cases, there are two of the top prospects that we want for the Cardinals who won't be available for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and that takes us to the New York Giants. I think even a week ago, both of us felt like this was going to be a place where you saw an offensive lineman or maybe an edge rusher, maybe even a linebacker, and that's basically gone away. It feels like this is another where you're penciling in a name, and that's DeVonta Smith, the Heisman Trophy winning wide receiver from Alabama. There's been reports that the Giants absolutely love him, and if that's true, that's a steal for them at 11, but that also takes one of those other players off the board for the Cardinals.
Yes, it's bad news for the Cardinals so far, and because for me, that means Waddle, Surtain, and Smith in three consecutive picks are off the board, three of the four favorite guys for me for the Cardinals to take. And really, it's setting up Daniel Jones to say, hey, if you can't do it this year, you're going to have Saquon. You're going to have Kenny Golladay. You're going to have Sterling Shepard. You're going to have DeVonta Smith. You're going to have Ingram. If you can't make that work, okay, maybe you're not the guy. But that you're giving your young quarterback a chance. They added Andrew Thomas last year. They did make some investments on the offensive line a year ago. And so it's basically Daniel Jones, do your thing. We've done everything we can for you to be successful. And that brings us to the Philadelphia Eagles, who traded back from the sixth pick down to number 12. Unfortunately, for Cardinals fans and for what we want to see for the Cardinals, both of us have the last top guy going to Philadelphia. I've got J.C. Horn, the cornerback out of South Carolina. Philly badly needs defensive help, especially in the secondary. He adds basically everything you want in a cornerback. I like Surtain and Horn equally, basically. I think Horn might be a slightly better fit with the Cardinals, but either one of those guys, you're getting a great cornerback. He's going to help the Eagles. And that takes, so in four consecutive picks, my four favorite picks for the Cardinals, all gone. What about you?
And I had them going Jalen Waddle. It's actually astonishing. We lament the Arizona Cardinals and Steve Keim and what he's done. It's astonishing to look at the Eagles and think that they could literally draft every position at 12. I mean, obviously, they traded away from the quarterback situation, so they're going to give Jalen Hurts the year. But, I mean, they just drafted Andre Dillard, and they need help along the offensive line. They just drafted Jalen Reagor. They need help at wide receiver. They just traded for Darius Slay. They need help at cornerback. I mean, it's truly baffling to look at what they need.
A Super Bowl champion just from a few years ago.
Yeah, and so they go with Jalen Waddle. I think literally you could slot the top prospect here, and I don't think you'd be wrong.
And that the next two picks we have going the same direction. The Los Angeles Chargers with the 13th overall pick. We both have them going with the next best tackle on that's left available, and that's Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern. Though, if you talk to a few people, whether that's Daniel Jeremiah, Sully Chiefs, who was on your show on the original Draft Breakdown podcast, and Slater, who might be the best tackle prospect in the draft, falls to the Chargers. I even, in one version of this mock, I had the Chargers trading up to get him.
Yeah, and I don't think that would be a bad thing. I think that would actually be something that we could see come to fruition if quarterbacks are off the board and maybe the Broncos, you know, sitting at 9, you go get him there. If you're the Chargers, he's that good. He's worth it.
And they need a guy to protect Justin Herbert. So,
well, and you and I were discussing today, Chris Sims' mock draft had the Cardinals taking Christian Barmore, which is fine. I mean, it is whatever it is, but they had them passing on Rashawn Slater, and I would truly be baffled if they did that. Slater's among the guys. I mean, we mentioned the four, the two corners and two wide receivers. A guy like Slater would be in that mix if he was available. I just don't think he is going to be.
And with the 14th pick of the NFL draft, the Minnesota Vikings, we have them going the same direction. That's the next offensive lineman off the board, USC's Elijah Vera Tucker. Depending on how you view him, is he a tackle? Is he a guard? How do you see the Vikings using him moving forward?
I think that's why he's the best fit for the Vikings, because they can develop him where they feel like they need him, and he works the best, because they truly do need help at guard and tackle. It feels like an easy pick because they can basically plug him in where they want to.
And that's the interesting about Vera Tucker. The people, draft experts, feel that he can play tackle well and might be a great guard. He's very clean in his play. He won't give you extra nasty, but he'll get the job done. You'll really enjoy him in the lineup. I have him as an okay pick if the Cardinals were to end up landing him, especially considering their guard situation after this year. But, you know, he's off the board as well. So what's coming up next? The Cardinals pick is two selections away. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We will get to the Cardinals pick after the Patriots pick, and we'll go through the next 7 selections of the NFL draft. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Next up, number 15 overall. I mean, for Seth, this is not the New Orleans, this is not the New England Patriots, but rather the Detroit Lions, who traded out of the pick as the Patriots went up to get Mac Jones at number 7. For me, it is still the Patriots, because the Broncos bested the Patriots in a trade offer up to number 7 to get Trey Lance. So who do you have the Lions ultimately getting with the 15th pick?
I have them going with edge rusher Kwity Paye. The Lions are another one of those teams that could just go anywhere. But Paye, the first edge player off the board, he's kind of a high ceiling, even though he's kind of a high floor guy, even though he's a high ceiling, because he is such an athlete and he is such a workhorse. You know, they've got Trey Flowers, who they paid a ton of money, and Romeo Okorah, who they like there, but they, you know, they could use young and athletic to kind of round out that unit. So it'll be interesting to see where they go, but I have them going with Kwity Paye.
And I have the Patriots ending the fall of talented Penn State linebacker Micah Parsons. He lands to the Patriots at number 15. He will help Bill Belichick in his defense. It's interesting, kind of, so we've seen him come from Parsons in early mock drafts, was considered, you know, top 5 player. And maybe had he played this last season, it would have been the case. But he falls a bit, and he lands into a great situation, because if there's someone who knows how to get playmakers defensively to make plays, Bill Belichick does exactly that. Parsons is a good fit. And it keeps the Cardinals from having to consider taking another linebacker in the first round, which leads us to the Cardinals pick at number 16. I have them trading, and you have them staying. Who is your pick for the Cardinals?
I have them staying because of who was available, the way this fell, and he could have gone in a number of different spots. But because Micah Parsons was available, even though he is another linebacker, off-ball linebacker, and even though it's redundant, the fact is this kid is a unique talent, and he gives the Cardinals something a little more than what Isaiah Simmons does, and that's a true inside off-ball linebacker. They can continue to use Simmons as a hybrid type of player in a different number of different areas, and then, you know, kind of go from there with Simmons' continued growth, and then looking to move on from Jordan Hicks the year after.
And Parsons is interesting because while according to what we heard on local Arizona Sports Radio from John Gambadoro, is that the Cardinals don't view Parsons necessarily as that Mike backer. They view him as an Isaiah Simmons type player. Now, however, he could fit, because if you decide to use Simmons at a multiple spots, so potentially, talking even this year, Jordan Hicks, you take him off the field in passing downs. You put Hicks and Parsons in at the linebacker positions in base, with Isaiah Simmons playing a safety role. And then you slide Parsons over to play Hicks' position in nickel, and Simmons down to play play linebacker, bring in Jalen Thompson to play coverage. I think it would work. However, in my case, their top four targets are off the board, and so instead of settling on something that they're not necessarily convinced of at number 16, the Cleveland Browns come calling, because there is a linebacker they have their eyes on. And the Cardinals trade all the way back to number 26. So they drop 10 spots, whatever the cost. Maybe it's the Cardinals, who don't have a third or fourth round pick, will recoup a couple of picks in moving down that far. And the Browns move up because they want if you want to say the more modern version of Deion Buchanan in Notre Dame's Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, and they add him, knowing that the Las Vegas Raiders have their eyes on him, and so they leapfrog the Raiders to land JOK, super athletic, hybrid type linebacker out of Notre Dame, who has more linebacker experience than Deion Buchanan did, who did not play linebacker at all in college.
Yeah, and he would kind of round out that Browns defense, and I've had a couple people actually unprompted ask me if I've heard anything about the Browns calling the Cardinals. So that kind of jives with what we're talking about, is that they understand that they probably have to get in front of the Raiders to get JOK. And if that was to happen, the Cardinals may be able to take advantage. The question becomes, and you made the trade, so the question becomes, and you and I both wrote about it, is do we think that the Cardinals are going to get what we would call, quote unquote, fair value for the pick, for the trade down? Or is this going to be a situation where Steve Keim, maybe he doesn't get the extra pick? He still gets, you know, a third rounder this year, but maybe he doesn't get a third next year. Or maybe he only gets a fourth next year because of how many teams are looking to move back in this draft.
That's a possibility. But in this case, based on the talent that's left on the board between 16 and 26, is there a big difference in talent? Maybe, maybe not. And so if you get the same quality player, and even if you're not getting as much as you like in terms of compensation, you still land another pick, especially ideally they pick up a third rounder this year to give them a second day two pick, which we talked about on our last two preview shows, in terms of the talent that they're going to miss out on, there's a lot of solid potential in that round three range that the Cardinals don't have access to right now, whether it be a tight end or a cornerback if they don't end up getting a cornerback in this round, or a pass. There's a lot of options there.
Correct. And that's why, we'll see how this plays out, because it's going to be interesting to see if one of those kind of, we mentioned the four, and then the two names we mentioned outside of that would be Rashawn Slater and Micah Parsons, who are projected to go before the Cardinals pick. If one of those six guys ends up being there, you have to feel like they're going to pull the trigger, even if those players could fetch a better return, because those are quote unquote blue chip, high level impact players.
Now, moving on to number 17 to the Raiders, I have them standing pat. And while they might be disappointed in not getting JOK, the Notre Dame guy that the Browns got in the trade up, I have them standing pat, and they go with the same position. A guy that didn't get a lot of attention, but suddenly is getting potential first round talk. I don't know if that is being late to the party in terms of media, or if it is a case where media is overhyping him, but we're going to go with this. Kentucky's Jamin Davis, another high potential linebacker that can do some of the things that you want. And the Raiders they need help defensively in the middle of the field. I think that's a good pick. What do you see with the Raiders doing?
I think the Raiders bluff their way into trading down with the Browns themselves, and the Browns move up to get JOK. So just one slot later.
And so we both have the Browns landing JOK. That's interesting how we do that. And actually, the next three selections we agree on. Miami Dolphins, we both have edge rusher Jalen Phillips. So what we have the Dolphins doing early is getting an offensive weapon. You have them getting Kyle Pitts. I have them getting Ja'Marr Chase. And then they add the edge rusher. So, it's a homecoming. It's draft a guy out of Miami, Jalen Phillips. Probably he's your number one pass rusher, correct, off in this
correct.
Draft, right?
Yeah.
And so he's a good fit. He adds that edge presence. He has length. He has speed. I would not mind the Cardinals drafting him. He's not my favorite pick because you do wonder about the injury history, especially with the concussions at UCLA. But it's a perfect fit, I think, for Miami. Washington, the football team, we have them both going with the tackle. I originally had Washington trading up to get him. This is Virginia Tech's Christian Darrisaw, a guy, if you listened to Seth's free show a couple weeks ago on the original Draft Breakdown podcast, where they talked about Darrisaw is a guy that might have some red flags in terms of, now, most around the internet believe him to be one of the top three tackle prospects, but Sully Chiefs had concerns about his effort on the field. And so, but we have Washington going with the tackle. Makes sense at that spot. What was your thinking for the Washington there?
Washington's one of those teams that can go a number of different ways, and I just went with the guy that can play left tackle, more consensus left tackle in the draft scouting world over the guy that we both have going next to the Chicago Bears to play right tackle.
And that would be Tevin Jenkins, one of Seth's favorite linemen. He would not mind at all the Cardinals taking him. He's physical. He's nasty. He's, like Seth said on his show, he is an advanced run blocker. He adds that dimension that some of the other offensive tackles do not offer right away. That's what sets him apart. And while it's not a sexy pick for the Bears, guess what? They signed a not very sexy quarterback in Andy Dalton, so you might as well get someone to protect him and whatever quarterback they're only going to be drafting in a year.
Yeah, and to really help with Allen Robinson's, to protect Dalton, to get the ball to Robinson, and to let David Montgomery try to run the ball a little bit more. The Colts were interesting because I think you and I are both on the same page. We had no idea how to approach what they're going to do. We both agree that they're going to try to move down. It's just who's there to move up for at this point.
Right. You have them going with – now, on a lot of mock drafts, Jenkins is the guy to the Colts. But since Jenkins is off the board, we have them – you have them going with the same position. I have them going in another direction.
Yeah, I had them going with Sam Cosmi. I just went with the next kind of consensus offensive lineman. Cosmi and the another guy that I have going in the first round, Alex Leatherwood, offer a little ability, flexibility-wise, positionally. So I think that would make them the top choices there. The Colts are a really tough one to pin down right now.
And me, instead of going on the offensive line, because in terms of pass rushers, only one has come off the board for me. I have them going the direction of defense, which is actually, it's one of their weaker areas. As good as they are defensively, they do not have a dominant edge presence, and they go with Georgia's Azeez Ojulari. And so they address the defensive side of the ball, adding strength to their strength. I think it will give them an added dimension that they don't have. And coming up to the Rise of Sea Red podcast about our Cardinals talk on the web, we go to talk about the next seven picks. So the Titans, Jets, Steelers, Jaguars, Browns or Cardinals, or actually Raiders, Cardinals, Ravens, and Saints. That's coming next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. The Tennessee Titans are up next with the 22nd pick. We both have them going to defense, and it's necessary because Tennessee's defense was terrible last year. Who's your guy?
I went with the first defensive lineman off the board, Christian Barmore. And that is a tough one because they've got a lot of needs, but I think improving just their front seven on the defense is key, and Barmore gives them that.
And I have them going, since they lost Malcolm Butler, now an Arizona Cardinal, the Titans are going to take a chance on Caleb Farley, the uber-talented, uber-athletic Farley out of Virginia Tech, who's coming off of back surgery. It's interesting, kind of the talk, because his agent expects him to go top 20. Recently, the report came out that he might fall out of the first round, but isn't necessarily going to. The fact he opted out this last season added to the back surgery. I personally, based on what I know about the back surgery, what he said, I would be comfortable with the Cardinals taking it at number 16 overall. I understand where the concerns are. However, Tennessee needs help, and I think they're going to go with the upside, and they're going to bet on him coming back. Farley is a guy I really like. In terms of what he adds, in terms of that cover skills, he adds an element that we saw from Patrick Peterson in his early years, in his prime, his ability to recover and make plays on the ball. And so he adds a really high end. So they could get an absolute steal. If he were healthy, had not opted out in that case, then what we would have seen is him going, he'd be one of the top cornerbacks off the board. But he falls to number 22 for me.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because I don't think, after a report that we saw on Monday, or I don't think he goes in the first round. There's been he's had a lot of issues with the back, more than we know, especially with sciatica that he dealt with his entire 2019 season. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because from a talent perspective, he would be the number three corner in the draft to me. But I just, with the back, it's such a tough thing.
Which leads us to the New York Jets, who have their selection that came from the Seahawks in the Jamal Adams trade. We both have them going with the same player, Northwestern cornerback Greg Newsom II, with the addition of Robert Saleh, former San Francisco 49ers defensive coordinator, there now as head coach. You know that he wants to shore up that team defensively. Newsom, I like him a lot. Obviously, the 15 missed games in his three seasons at Northwestern is a question mark. But in terms of ability, he might be one of the most the funnest players to have because he would he's a villain type cornerback. He's a villain type cornerback for opposing teams. He's the type of player that opposing fans will hate because he is a nuisance.
Yeah, and that's the thing is he's just such a guy that creates so many problems that you'd love to have him. The injuries are a little different than Farley's for me because he didn't sustain a similar injury, but it was multiple just kind of nagging things over his career, ankle and a quad. Those things happen, but. I definitely do understand the concern and why he might go a little lower than what I would be comfortable taking him, including at 16.
The Pittsburgh Steelers at number 24, we are in consensus. And it seems to be the consensus across the internet that the Steelers are going to try and replace James Conner with a stud of a running back in Najee Harris. A guy I am perfectly capable, like honestly, I'm perfectly comfortable if the Cardinals take him at number 16. I think he's going to be that good. I think he's that safe a prospect and that high-end a prospect. But he falls to 24. Unfortunately, that goes a couple of picks before the Cardinals selection, in my case, as they traded down to 26. So Najee Harris, first running back off the board to the Steelers. But it feels like that's what everyone expects.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. It seems like it's almost in pen at this point, which is odd for a 24th right. overall pick.
The Jaguars come up next at the 25th pick, as this is the pick that they got from the Rams in the Jalen Ramsey trade after they got their franchise quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. I have them going with a big time a big weapon, speedy. Very promising, and that would be Terrace Marshall out of LSU, a guy who kind of was an afterthought until this last season when Jamar Chase opted out, and then he was great. And then his pro day showed off the numbers, his athletic testing, in this year of the fastest draft class ever. But they add the offensive weapon to give Trevor Lawrence, since they've already been spending money on the offensive line. And so they add quarterback and receiver, something to some rapport and some chemistry that they can build for years.
Yeah, and I have them trading down just a little bit because as soon as Harris goes, I think that's going to trigger something for the Buffalo Bills where they can't sit and wait and they go down and get or they go up and get Travis Etienne. There's been reports that they really like Etienne and they're going to make an effort to go get him. In a trade or in the draft in the first round. So if Harris goes at 24, I could see a scenario where they're the team that trades up because they don't want to miss out on both Harris and Etienne in the draft.
The next pick at number 26 previously belonged to the Cleveland Browns, but in this scenario, neither one of our drafts has the Browns here. Seth has the Raiders at number 26, and I have the Cardinals. So the Cardinals are up for me. Here, we both have the same player going at number 26, although it is to different teams. Who's your guy for the Raiders?
Yeah, one of my favorite players in the draft. I think a guy that can be a star is Zaven Collins. It'll be interesting to see what NFL teams think of him and where they deploy him. There's some concern about his size being too big to play as an off-ball linebacker. We've heard through the grapevine that the 10 pounds he's added might be at the request of a specific team.
and from what we're hearing, so Zaven Collins is the guy for the Cardinals. It's interesting because it would be, and Seth had the Cardinals taken Micah Parsons. So this is now the fourth time since 2014 that the Cardinals have used the first round pick on a guy that they want to play linebacker. Well, that they used to pay. So it was 2014, Dalen Buchanan was a safety. They moved a linebacker. They took Hassan Reddick in 2017, moved him to linebacker. Then they took Isaiah Simmons last year, a guy who played more linebacker over the career at Clemson, but was mostly a defensive back, move him to linebacker. And now I have the Cardinals, and if you listen to Arizona Sports Radio, Arizona Sports 98.7, John Gambadoro listed Collins as one of his five probably locks for the Cardinals to draft, wherever that might be. The interesting thing is, well, one, it's either drafting an inside linebacker for the fourth time in a few years, or also for the fourth time if they don't see him as an inside backer, because he would be the Jordan Hicks replacement. He's big enough. If he plays inside backer, the size and movement and coverage ability between him and Isaiah Simmons is fascinating. But
it would give them one of the most diverse and athletic inside linebacking corps that the NFL has ever seen. And I'm not overstating that when I say it.
It's scary good. But at his medical check in Indianapolis, he weighed in at 259 at his pro day. He was up to 270. I don't know of any 270-pound inside backers. And we've heard, was it Tony Pauline that said that the Cardinals actually really like him as a pass rusher? He does have the body, frame, and athleticism that matches an outside linebacker position, but he really hasn't been a pass rusher. Potentially, you could use him as the Devon Kennard-type player. That said, you're either using a first-round pick on an inside linebacker for the fourth time, or you're using a first-round pick on a guy whose position you are changing, which is weird. We think Collins is going to be good, but use him at inside backer instead of trying to make him something that he's not. Now, he himself has said that whatever position that he's asked to play, he wants to run and tackle and run and cover. He doesn't necessarily feel that his skill set is best if he's just moving forward trying to get to the quarterback. If they deploy him as the drop backer in base, okay. I think that's a good fit for him. Except, do you want to use a first-round pick on a base player who right now would play two downs? That's the question.
Yeah, it's an interesting one too. And so that's where this all comes from. This stems from is what is going on with Collins and how does he fit into what they want to do. This seems like a pick for the long, and I get that they're all long-term picks, but this seems like a pick for 2022 more than 2021.
And honestly, with the exception of cornerback and receiver, cornerback is really the only position where you're going to get any great immediacy. Maybe running back if they went with, but you've already got Chase Edmonds and James Conner. At receiver, he would be playing wide receiver 4, maybe pushing Christian Kirk for playing time. So almost any, with the exception of cornerback, almost every position is not going to give you nearly as much immediacy as you might like. That said, let's move on to the Baltimore Ravens with the 27th pick. And we both have them going the same position, although it is different players. With Terrace Marshall off the board, I have them going with Elijah Moore. They need playmakers for Lamar Jackson in the passing game to unlock more. And if they're going to unlock that passing game and become even more dynamic, they need more. And I think more can do that for them. But you have them going with Terrace Marshall. Why do you think he's a better fit in this situation?
I think that they just need somebody that's a little bigger for Lamar in this situation, and that's why I would have them going with Marshall as kind of the big outside target that they can thrower down the field too. It gives them Mark Andrews down the middle and around the seam. They've got Marquise Brown as the speed guy, and then Marshall as their kind of outside big target.
We move on to selection number 28, and that is the New Orleans Saints. We have two different positions for them. Who is your pick for New Orleans?
Asante Samuel Jr. I think they need help at the cornerback position. They could go a number of different ways, though. I mean, this is honestly one of those coin flip draft things, but I think Samuel gives them a guy that can play this year in the slot and then can potentially take over on the boundary for Marshawn Lattimore next year.
And I have them going with a pass rusher. They lost Trey Hendrickson in free agency. Cameron Jordan isn't getting younger. And Marcus Davenport hasn't been a stud yet. So I have them going with the high ceiling, maybe high bust factor, in Penn State's Jason Owe. In terms of athleticism, super fun. But with the team in the situation they are, they're transitioning from Drew Brees to Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill, you want to make that defense better so you don't have to expect so much from those quarterbacks. And that will bring us to the next part. We're going to come back next up on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We wrap up the draft, the final four picks that are left, and then we wrap things up. And that's coming next on Rise of Sea Red. Back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We move on to pick number 29. And that would be the Green Bay Packers. Again, we both have them going kind of in the same direction, same position, same kind of player. Only, who's your guy?
I have them going with Elijah Moore. For similar reasons why you had him going to the Ravens, I think he fits with what the Packers want to do. He gives them a really nice inside threat opposite of Davante Adams, who might be, you know, one of the three best receivers in the NFL right now.
And with the same idea, since Elijah Moore's off the board, I have them going with Florida's Kadarius Toney.
I think they're both a fit. Both of those, yeah, fit really well.
We move on to pick number 30, the Buffalo Bills. For me, they take, so I don't actually have them going with Travis Etienne. They honestly have a lot of different ways they can go. Now, at cornerback, they've been trying to replace one of their cornerbacks for a while, and here I have them going defensive back to add to that defense, and I have them taking Asante Samuel Jr. instead of the Saints, where you have him going. And here, for you, obviously the Bills traded up, so that brings Jacksonville down to number 30.
Yeah, and it seems, again, that they've got a lot of interest in Trevor Morig, from the talented safety out of TCU. I know they like Christian Barmore as well, but if he's not there, trading down could make some sense, and getting Morig at the end of round one while picking up a potential third-round pick for a team that's just starting out with their new regime.
Interesting here, for considering the Ravens picked up the 31st pick in their trade of Orlando Brown to the Kansas City Chiefs. Many people think that they're going to target offensive linemen, while we do not have them doing that in either pick. I had them avoiding offensive line because they weren't sold on the prospects at that particular slot, and they are expected to add veteran help, say Charlie Villanueva out of, who was playing for the Steelers. And so I have them actually going back to their roots of, you know, big time safety. Do you remember how dominant those defenses were with Ed Reed? Let's try Trayvon Morig, TCU, who went to the Jacksonville Jaguars at your 30th pick. Now, what direction do you go?
I have them going with Jason Owe. So you had him going to the Saints. I have him as a luxury pick at this one, going to the Ravens, where, and who's better, like, who gets more out of athletic pass rushers than the Ravens?
And for me, the reason not going pass rusher there is I wasn't nearly as sold, say, a Gregory Rousseau, who there's some question marks about, and so, yeah, which leaves them to the last pick of the first round, the world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Two different directions. You have them going on the offensive line. Who's your pick for the Bucs to round out the first round?
Alex Leatherwood. They had some injuries along the offensive line. That's really the only thing that's going to derail them from going back-to-back this year as they return all 22 starters to their already loaded team.
And I have them. For me, I think this is Bruce Arians trying to get that type, get the Robert Kendiche type player, but the good version. And with the 32nd pick, the last pick of the first round, they go with Alabama's Christian Barmore, who has, to me, he's almost kind of like a Robert Kendiche in terms of his potential, but didn't reach. But we saw the high end in the playoff, and with Ndamukong Suh up there in age, he gives them someone to rotate in and to transition from in a year when they probably, especially if they win the championship again this next season, or they're going to have to transition out from some of those veterans that they have.
Yeah, and that's the thing is they're so loaded that they can just take whatever position they want to kind of get ready for their continued growth.
And you could also see them taking a receiver here, especially as they've got Godwin on the franchise tag.
Yeah, and they have not brought back Antonio Brown yet.
And there's a receiver is very possible there. So there we have it. We've got 32 picks. The first round is wrapped up. And the next time we're beyond, we'll actually have picks for the Cardinals to talk about. We will break down the draft and the Cardinals selections and what went on in the draft. And with that, this ends episode 305. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Of course, find us on social media. You can find us anywhere in terms of podcasts, but let us know what you think of the drafts that we put together. Are we crazy? And compare it after the fact. See where we went completely wrong. See where we got it right. Again, thanks for listening. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.